our director of state often says this to me when I'm talking. He says, Ross, you know, if you've been to one state, you've been to one state. And so it varies. The answer to your question is the approach to zero trust varies depending on where you are.
Today on the Daily Scoop podcast from the Scoop News Group, a new report on zero trust across the public sector, and the top tech takeaways from the Biden administration's 2025 budget. It's Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. Welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast, where you'll hear the latest news and trends facing government leaders. I'm the host of the Daily Scoop podcast, Billy Mitchell. Here's what's happening now. The White House's budget request for 2025 is here, and the $7.3 trillion spending plan highlights some major priorities for the Biden administration as it goes into a critical election year. Top among them is the White House's request for $3 billion across federal agencies to responsibly develop, test, procure, and integrate transformative AI applications across the federal government in support of the implementation of the Biden administration's AI executive order. An OMB spokesperson told FedScoop that the budget request also includes $300 million in mandatory funding to increase agency funding for AI to, quote, address major risks and to advance its use for public good. The spending plan provides $65 million in support of the Department of Commerce's AI Safety Institute, which is set to create guidelines, tools, benchmarks, and best practices to evaluate and mitigate risks using red teaming and other methods. According to the spokesperson, the consortium will include work to identify and mitigate against the creation of harmful synthetic content like deepfakes and enable the adoption of privacy-preserving AI. Finally, the budget also includes $32 million in funding across the U.S. Digital Service, General Services Administration, and Office of Personnel Management to bring AI talent into the public sector and advance AI priorities across the federal government. In other news, Daily Scoop listeners will be familiar with the back and forth between the Biden administration and Congress in an effort to continue funding the Technology Modernization Fund in recent years. And Monday, after years of appropriators walking TMF funding back from the levels the White House has called for, the Biden administration asked for a more slimmed down sum of $75 million to support federal tech modernization projects next fiscal year. That number was $200 million for fiscal 2024 and $300 million in fiscal 2023. While Congress hasn't successfully passed the fiscal 2024 appropriations bill that would fund the TMF, appropriators in the House have expressed their desire to zero it out, while those on the Senate side would like to see the TMF send back some of the money it was given under the American Rescue Plan in 2021. The TMF's hang-ups with Congress have largely centered on its repayment mechanism. When created in 2017 under the Modernizing Government Technology Act, recipients of TMF money were required by law to repay those funds within 5 years. But with the issuance of the $1 billion to the TMF in 2021, the Biden administration also created a flexible repayment policy for certain high-priority projects. After House lawmakers late last year introduced a bill that would require the fund to return to the original repayment terms, GSA and OMB went ahead and updated the repayment policy on its own to reflect a new consistent repayment floor with a minimum of 50% repayment, with rare exceptions decided by the GSA administrator and OMB director. You can read more about these stories and much more at fedscoop.com. Agency adoption of zero trust architecture was mandated by the Biden administration's executive order on improving the nation's cybersecurity and OMB memo M2209, which created a strategy for its adoption. But the federal government is just one part of the larger U.S. public sector, and with vast amounts of data and information being shared regularly across levels of government, it's critical that other entities like states secure their enterprises as well. Ross Noderf is former chief of the Office of Management and Budget's cyber team in the White House and the executive director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation, which recently issued a white paper focused on zero trust in the public sector. He joins the podcast now to discuss that new white paper, the evolution of zero trust, and the top takeaways from the White House's fiscal 2025 budget. Ross, welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really excited to have this conversation. There's a lot going on in the federal IT space right now. The budget just came out, which has some really interesting details I think we'll get into later in the conversation. But to start with, I wanted to focus our conversation on this new zero trust paper that the Alliance for Digital Innovation released recently. Walk me through that. What are some of the top points that you developed in building that paper out?
Yeah, and look, thank you for the question. Thank you for having me on again, Billy. This is great. I think we just dropped this paper. It's on our website. People can go find it. AllianceForDigitalInnovation.org. The goal of this paper was to really target all of public sector. So we as Alliance do work both at the federal levels and at the state and local levels. And I think it's important to make sure that we are thinking about it as a public sector in its entirety. So what do we do here? What am I excited about here? We talk about what is zero trust, right? Because the understanding of zero trust varies across the spectrum. We really rely heavily on some of the federal standards-based NIST publications. And then we go into both the federal approach to ZTA, zero trust architecture, which is what ZTA stands for, as well as state and local approaches to ZTA. And then we talk about how to develop a roadmap. So we're really targeting our audience are those folks who are working to support the public sector. We really want them to think through and understand what does it take to develop a zero trust roadmap and how, if that's something that we are moving towards, how do they then go acquire the appropriate capabilities to make it happen. And it's not just capabilities and a roadmap, it's also the workforce to support it. So how are we educating the workforce at the state, at the local level, at the federal level still too, to really create a seamless, fulsome, secure, zero trust environment for us to operate our enterprise systems?
Yeah, tell me more about, I mean, obviously, I think our listeners are going to know a lot about the federal efforts at Zero Trust, but how does that compare or differ from federal to state levels? And is there any sort of overlap, whether that's, you know, at the NIST level or the CISA level? Is there sort of some you know, a Venn diagram where state and Fed might interact in some degree when it comes to Zero Trust?
Sure, no. Our director of state often says this to me when I'm talking. He says, Ross, you know, if you've been to one state, you've been to one state. And so it varies. The answer to your question is the approach to zero trust varies depending on where you are, right? We have some folks who are closely aligned with the work that's happening at the federal level. They leverage and use the same NIST standards that our federal departments and agencies use. On the other hand, we have states that are taking pieces of it and starting more at a level that they can consume given the environments that they have, right? So some of them are even more federated than our current federal government system. So you've got agencies all over the place. You've got authorities that don't necessarily align to a CIO or CTO. You've got somebody who's run the state. So what I've seen is a patchwork. And an example of one of the more the earlier folks who were earlier on their journey are states that take one of the zero trust pillars from the maturity models and really start to tackle that. And what we've seen, and look, I'm supportive of any steps forward to raise the bar on security, but what we've seen is that there's been a lot of efforts and energy around digital identity and really tackling that identity pillar. From looking at how to employ and deploy multi-factor authentication across the departments and agencies to developing and starting to look at what it means to actually be phishing resistant in certain areas. I think that was something that we've seen in a lot of places. We've seen some of the, and you'll see it in the paper, Utah became the first state to, in the nation, to codify zero trust as a strategic technology priority. So we're seeing a lot of legislative movement the area, which I think is interesting. We've got I'm looking at the we've got Maryland, who has a bill that's starting to look at how critical infrastructure overlaps and interplays with the rest of the public sector and is considering mandating zero trust as part of a critical infrastructure play as well. So it's really interesting. And then California, of course, passed the assembly that requires state agencies to implement zero trust and must achieve initial maturity and then optimal maturity by 2030, right? So it's a few years away, but it's not that far away, especially when you start to think about how long it takes for some of the enterprise adoptions across these major states to really be fulsomely adopted.
And, you know, it strikes me as interesting is, you know, I think about the federal government and there's the federal zero trust strategy and it the requirement that agencies meet some sort of zero trust maturity by 2024. Obviously, at the state level, there's 50 of these governments that are all doing their own thing. So do you see that there's a correlation between those states that you mentioned and maybe some others that are really being strategic about it and those being the ones that are most mature or maybe even flipped on its head? Are there ones that are really not considering zero trust and are just way behind the eight ball on this?
So I'm not going to say states that are. Sure. There are states that are not even considering this yet. And I'm not casting dispersions on those states. There are, again, you got to take a lot of factors in place, right? The Scoop podcast covers all of enterprise IT. And we sometimes look at security in a silo. But there are states that are really significantly underfunded from an enterprise IT standpoint. And for those states to start considering implementation of zero trust when their legacy environments are as antiquated as they are, it's almost a little bit anathema. But that said, there are ways to pepper in zero trust into those legacy environments or those, you know, hybrid environments where they have some folks that have taken money invested in digital services as it interacts with their citizens, but they have some processes that are still very much driven by old compute technology, if there's even compute technology there at all, right? And one of the things that I really like about this paper is it talks about how to develop a roadmap to get there, no matter where you are in your journey. And I think that that's important. That's my favorite part of this paper is talk about, you know, starting from the basics, start inventorying your existing environment, right? You know, talk about how you are making those small investments to upgrade your legacy stack of technology, and at the same time building in zero trust into that investment into optimized compute power, right? Like there's security and technology modernization go hand in hand, and I think that's very important for us to remember.
So you mentioned the funding aspect, and I think it's a good opportunity then to sort of transition into the budget talk, because sure. At the federal level, we just received the 2025 fiscal budget. And obviously that's going to change to some degree as it goes through the appropriations process. Hey, maybe this time next year, it won't even be passed based on the way things are going with the current budget or appropriation cycle. But look, what are some big takeaways that you've seen? And maybe we can start with zero trust in cybersecurity writ large, because I know that's a big portion of the tech budget that's called out every year and really spelled out in granular detail.
Sure. I mean, look, I think that when you look at the budget, there is a lot of documents that are included in the budget. When you take the main corpus, that, you know, roughly 200-page budget document that OMB pushed out yesterday, there's two mentions of zero trust. The one first mention is at Department of Treasury and IRS at the Cybersecurity Enhancement Account. They say we're going to increase that account. We are going to request an increase of that account by $150 million. And that is going to go to helping us build out a zero trust architecture within our organization. It's great. The other one is at Department of State and USAID. They talk about an $800 million investment in their both IT and security environments. And of that, part of that is going to increase their zero trust, right? And again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Investments in modernization can at the same time be investments in zero trust. And I think that's a very important way. I mean, you're thinking about how you're configuring your environment. So, but those are the two, just to go back to the budget, those are the two shout outs that I saw there. Now, look, there's a whole section in the analytical perspectives chapter that talks about a large number of different priorities that the administration has, from AI to investments in the technology modernization fund to investments in zero trust, you know, right? So there are other cybersecurity. The analytical perspective chapter, I believe, said there's $13 billion in investments in cybersecurity. Now that's not just zero trust. That's not just enterprise IT. That's broader than that. But, you know, hopefully we'll see some of that start to come through within the 24 budget that's still being worked on right now, and then hopefully into the 25 year, right? I mean, historically, and you know this, Billy, historically during an election year, the budget request from the current administration when you have a divided Congress often stalls.
Yep.
I'm not making any predictions, but given the, you know, historical precedent and given our current, you know, where we are in the 24 cycle right now, I would be, you know, it's going to be a long row to hoe to get to full funding for some of this stuff. But I think it's a very important for the administration to put a marker in the ground, say, this is where we're looking to invest our resources, this is where we're currently investing our resources, which is what I tell my members all the time. Take a look at the budget and think about it in context of where funding is today, and know that this is where the administration's mindset is. All of those agencies have to build out their budgets, and as they're doing that, they're thinking about where they're currently investing, where they want to go. So it's very much a roadmap for them at the agency level to kind of show people, hey, this is where we're trying to take our organization.
That's great. You mentioned the TMF as well. We had a story up on that. And just kind of contextualizing the numbers there, it looks like $75 million was the sort of top line for what the administration wants to give the TMF, which is, in my opinion, significantly less than previous years. And I think that tells a story about some of the struggles that the administration has seen getting appropriations for that. But all that aside, you know, the TMF is a key mechanism within the Biden administration for funding some of this modernization. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on sort of you know, level of requested funding and sort of what you think the future of the TMF looks like, both in an election year, as you mentioned, but also going forward.
Sure. I'll take that in two parts. So first of all, the request from the administration. Frankly, I was underwhelmed and a little disappointed that it was a $75 million request. I think that the TMF has done yeoman's work in moving the ball forward at departments and agencies in ways, you know, they try to tell the story, but it's not often heard, right? I mean, you guys report regularly on what those investments look like. Mm-hmm. It is a vehicle and a pathway that agencies are using to really make investments. Now, I would have loved to have seen a bigger investment or bigger request. I would have loved to have seen more funding put into a space where they can make targeted, concrete, and discrete investments in zero trust, in customer experience, and in legacy modernization, right? Those are the three things the administration called out. And the Hill is supportive. The Hill is basically saying, show us your work, and show us how you guys are recouping funds, and, you know, we're happy to work with you on this. So I would have loved to see a bigger number. Now, that's 25 budget. Let's talk about where the TMF is today and what I think the work is that needs to be done. So you've got the House and you've got the Senate that are both skeptical, and it's tough. It is tough when you take one appropriations bill and you are asked to, underneath a 302B allocation, for those budget nerds out there, the level of spending for a specific bill, in this case, it's the FSGG, which includes things like Treasury, it includes the General Services Administration, right? It includes some pretty substantial stuff, and say, hey, we want you to put aside a significant chunk of money just for IT investments in other agencies that aren't within that bill. It's hard to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's not possible, and that doesn't mean that there's not interesting and creative ways around it. I would love to see the administration working closely with the appropriators to think through the best path to get funds into the TMF so that they can be used and frankly repaid at a rate that makes sense. There's discussions right now on the House side, as well as some of the Senate side folks, that are thinking about what is a good repayment structure looks like? What should the things that are being targeted look like? What was the fund initially created for? Those are all great questions to ask. It's the role of the oversight and accountability team to ask those questions. And I think those are good discussion points to be had. I do think that the Technology Modernization Fund, PMO, the General Services Administration, you know, have a responsibility to continue to work with Congress and frankly, do as good a job as possible of communicating their successes and wins. Billy, you and I pay attention to this stuff all day long. So we see where those investments happen and how they make sense. I think communicating that effectively to Congress and to the various committees that have the oversight over those different sections is a very important thing. And I think we've started to see that in recent months, especially, but it's something that I think that TMF, PMO and GSA as a whole need to invest more time in. And frankly, OMB could do it too. So.
Yeah, totally. I totally understand. And I think that's the definite hang up there. But it'll be interesting to see, like you said, if there is a maybe creative different model that the fund can come up with to find some funding that's outside of that appropriations bill. Ross, as we close out, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about your focus on commercial tech at the Alliance for Digital Innovation and how you really want to kind of remove the barriers and make sure that the acquisition cycle can make sure that government users can get the tech they need. So as we close out, are there any other initiatives that come to mind that kind of help federal agencies get tech in the hands of users that need it?
Yeah, and I want to thank you for letting me close out with this. I think that paying attention to how we do acquisitions and paying attention into how we introduce additional compliance are both very important levers into enabling commercial technology to find its way into the hands of the people that need it most, whether it's enterprise users or mission owners, right? You've got folks in the Department of Defense that need AI for battlefield use, and it's not just being created in the DoD in bespoke code. This is stuff that can be purchased right now that's happening in real time that needs to come in and move at the speed in which that technology is being adopted. So that's what we do at ADI. I think that when we are looking at how to adopt and purchase the solutions, the commercial technologies, making sure that we are doing it in a way that allows for adequate risk management, but not producing an overly burdensome compliance environment is absolutely critical. It's absolutely critical. We're seeing the development of AI through the OMB AI memo. And my big worry is that it's going to create a number of different agency approaches to ensuring compliance against a series of requests from OMB to ensure that it's adequate, the risk is adequate match. That's going to cause a grinding in the wheels. We have to think about it from a broader pathway and how we reduce the speed to acquisition. So that's one. Two is, computing is not cheap, and we need to think about some of how we've got the legacy environment set up from an acquisition rules and regulation standpoint, and think about how we open them up to more modern technology, right? I'm not saying authorize spending of $1 billion. I'm saying raise the bar to allow for the consumers at the individual departments and agencies to buy tech when they need it, where they need it, right? So if there's the simplified acquisition threshold, Senator Peters has a bill to raise that to $2 million from the $250,000. That's the type of thinking that we're looking for, and that's the type of thinking we applaud and are promoting here at ADI.
Very interesting. Well, Ross, fantastic conversation. Lots of great insight and details into Zero Trust, the budget, and everything going on in the federal IT community. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Billy. I appreciate it.
You can learn more about Zero Trust at thedailyscooppodcast.com.
The Daily Scoop podcast is available on all podcast platforms. If you've already rated the podcast on your platform of choice, thanks so much. High ratings and good reviews of the show help more people to find it. The Daily Scoop podcast is a production of the Scoop News Group in Washington, D.C. Adam Butler and Carlin Fisher help put the show together, and the entire Scoop News Group team contributes. We'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode. Until then, I'm your host, Billy Mitchell. Thanks so much for listening.